Hi everyone and welcome to the Parma podcast. I am James Prescott, your host. Welcome to the show. I'm delighted to welcome back a guest who was on the podcast about 4 years ago when it had a different name and has now returned because he's just released a new book. So welcome to the podcast, Rob Bell.
James Prescott, whatever the name is, here we are. Who cares what the name is?
No, who cares? Yeah, that's right, yeah.
it's James Prescott, everybody.
Yes, the man, the myth, the legend, yeah. I should put that on my Twitter feed. It's really great to have you. Welcome back. And how's kind of the pandemic been treating you and lockdown and things?
Well, my family and I have been in our house for 6 months, and then there were protests, and we were marching, like, that went right by our house, and then there was looting that came, like, to the end of our block, and now there are these massive fires, and so the sun is pink, and there's ash on our yard, and the air quality is hazardous, so you're not supposed to go outside. So it has, what I mean, 2020 just stumbled into the room drunk and was like, I'm a year.
Right? Absolutely. It's like nothing surprises me anymore.
2020 is the crazy uncle on the roof shooting off fireworks, like, get, you know what I mean? It's just, whew. Yeah, but we know from ancient wisdom and from history that it's brutal and tense, and we have a rising death toll. And we also know that historically, in the midst of these sorts of tragedies, is often when people take serious stock, you know, of who we are. And especially in America, a number of these institutions aren't serving us like they're designed to.
Yeah.
So we have to rethink what we mean by education and police and, you know?
Yeah, that's right. It's just, that's my feeling.
The number of things that are being tossed up in the air, it's something.
It is. I feel exactly the same. It's, it's a reckoning almost. It's like a kind of grief.
Sorry, what are you saying?
I was going to say, grief does that, doesn't it? You know, because this has been a collective grief experience. And
right. And you were saying, how's it treating me? It's this experience where all of these things sit side by side in your heart. Like death and loss and grief and hope and a great unmasking that had to happen so that everybody could see just what's been underneath the surface for a while. Like all of these things that normally would take their turn in your heart sit side by side. So then you have to either expand or you get way smaller. Like it's, which is always the invitation in anything.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And it actually ties in nicely to your book as well.
Oh, good.
It does. It's like, I see I did a segue there. I've been doing this for 5 years. I'm good at segues now. Because a lot of your book, and it's called Everything is Spiritual, obviously. I love that title. But it's called Everything is Spiritual. And it's I think it's probably the most personal thing that I've read of yours. It's very much your story. A lot of it is about, having read it, there's a lot of endings and a lot of beginnings. There's a lot of grief and then new beginnings out of the grief. Like not just the loss of a family member, which you talk about at the beginning of the book, but then your band having to end, and then having to move to Grand Rapids from where you were before that, and then having to leave Grand Rapids and move back and all of that. And I just noticed this pattern of grief and maybe a bit of pain and trauma in leaving, and then new beginnings. seems to be kind of a story through the book.
There's a feeling that's baked into the book. It's like a millimeter below the surface of the book, which is things end not because it's bad or because something went wrong, but because it was a season. And no one's angry with the fall because it turned into winter. That's its job, is to be fall.
Yeah.
And then it ends. If it was always fall, it wouldn't be called fall. Who knows what that... Yeah, like, it has to be a fall, which means it has to end so the winter can begin. And winter has to end so you have spring. Like, there are these rhythms and seasons to creation. And for many people in the modern world, deeply cut off from the natural rhythms, they only know an ending that's bad. Lots of divorces, not a lot of graduations. I wanted people to pick up that. And then in other places, I'm sure you've seen this, if a chapter ends and somebody leaves and it's good, then they're disloyal, then they're a quitter, then they walked away, then they abandoned. No, they went there and did that, and they gave themselves to it, and then the season came to an end. And they're leaving because it's good, not because anything's wrong. And it's like the addiction to scandal, the assumption, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So often, like, oh, no, there's got to be a story there. Something happened.
Yeah.
No, sometimes nothing happened other than somebody was tuned into their own heart. That's the story. And it was time to go do the next thing. So I wanted people to pick that up. But that's a perfectly normal part of the evolution of a person's path.
Yeah, absolutely. That's something I've experienced in my own life. You know, I chose to quit a job because it was time to go. I chose to sell my flat because it was time to move. And those were difficult decisions and they were grieving experiences, but I never doubt that they were the right decisions.
They were also good.
Yeah, but they were.
It sounds like the grief took place within a larger good. And so it's a good grief. Yes, I'm saying goodbye to this.
Yeah.
Of course. It's the loss of how it was. But I'm doing this because there's something ahead.
Absolutely.
And I can't step into that unless I let go of this. And just the numbers of times over the past couple of years I've gotten to say to somebody who's asking a question exactly like what we're talking about, like, just, hey, take a deep breath. It's totally normal. What you're doing, what you're thinking, what you're feeling, it's all a part of it. And that's all the person needed. And they just sort of, you can see their shoulders, like they just relax, like,
it's
part of it.
It is, and there's that story in the book of when I think you were standing at Mars Hill and looking out over everything, and you just, I think you just had this thing in you, like you said, we built a church. We started a church, and it's like, it was almost like a finality of it, like, oh, we've done this. This is over.
Right. It was a really surreal experience to have started something and then realize, oh, I'm done here. And it had like this, hey, good job. You want to do this? You did this. There. It was so sort of matter of fact. There was a period at the end of the sentence. It was dramatic, but not dramatic. You know what I mean? At some level, it was just, yeah, good. See? Excellent. Ready? Okay. Pack your bag. Well, guess what else we're going to go do?
Yeah. And it was a risk as well. There was no kind of certainty about what would happen when you left.
But you just, there's always risk. It's as risk if you stay.
Exactly, yeah.
There's always risk.
Oh, yeah, that's true. There's risk if you stay. Absolutely true.
Yeah, whenever someone talks about risk, like, ooh, I don't know, that's pretty risky. So is staying exactly where you are, which might be what you are to do. But nevertheless, this idea that there's risk in one direction and not in the other. Staying and doing the exact same thing you've been doing might even be more risky. Sometimes leaving or blowing the whole thing up is actually less risky. So the whole thing, like even like in the book, I'm the section on quantum physics, there's unpredictability, uncertainty, is present at an atomic level. This whole thing is way less stable than anybody realizes. So once you can make peace with that, you actually can enjoy it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I resonated with a lot of that because I've learned to embrace risk and, you know, making bold decisions, leaving jobs, selling flats, and, you know, not having any guaranteed outcomes after that. I actually learned to enjoy it the more I did it. You always kind of become addicted to it almost. It's like, oh, I like doing this.
You get better at it.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So I don't have that fear of doing it anymore, which is great. It's very liberating.
Yeah, well said.
And I encourage a lot of other people to do it now. So one of the things you talk about in the book, and very courageously, is back when you were at the church you started, and it kind of almost becoming too big, or like almost taking over your life. Like you kind of just always producing, always feeling that like pressure to, you know what I mean? Like it got a bit too big, and you ended up kind of in your office in kind of the fetal position, and you talk about this in the book. And you know, someone who does a lot of mental health advocacy and talks about mental health a lot on this show, I think that was a really powerful thing to share. Because so many of us struggle with, you know, with our mental health and with identity and with feeling powerless and out of control. I was just curious about what did you learn from that, and what kind of boundaries and practices did you put in place after that to look after your mental health better?
Oh man, how much time do we have? I had just picked up, you keep going. That's the answer. The answer, most of the time, okay, pretty much all the time, what I had picked up at an early age was you just keep going. You know what I mean? Mm. Just work harder. Try harder. Be more disciplined. And so when in doubt, I just push through. Like you reach down and find the energy and you do more work. You show up again. You make another phone call. You send another email. You go to another meeting. And I just, like my body, heart, mind, soul, spirit, I mean, it's all one. It just ran out. It was just exhausted at some soul deep in the bones level. And I had to, in the book, I talk about the mind-blowing idea that there's an inner journey you can go on. And I love writing about this stuff. I tried to write about it like what it was like at the time. Because now I'm like, duh. But 20 years ago, that was like, whoa! Like, you don't...
Yeah.
Like, for example, if there's somebody in your life who just sets you off, they have a supernatural ability to get under your skin.
Mm.
You don't have to wonder why. Like, you can... There are trained professionals who can help you. You can figure out what it is about them that provokes you. If you have giant mood swings, if your body sometimes feels like it's not even your body, like you're just floating around in this machine, like there's a whole world of people, as you well know, that are like experts, and they've given themselves to helping the rest of us sort this stuff out. And you can go back to your childhood, you can go back to wounds, you can go back to traumas, whatever you gotta do. This work can be done.
Yeah.
And so for me, it was like, okay, why do I have a problem saying no? Why do I go and go and go and go and go? Why do I resist the idea that I have limits? Why is it so important for everybody to know how hard I'm working? And as I like peeled back those layers, and there were people who helped me, like I got clarity. It was amazing.
Mm.
So the number one thing that came out of it was, oh, you have no rhythm of life. You don't have, like, a sustainable way of living. So how do you live in such a way that 5 years from now you'll have more energy and more passion. And that was the biggest giant thing that came out of that was, okay, so we're going to have to start practicing like our Sabbath rhythm of life. There has to be at least one day a week, at least. It's different than all the others. And that sort of changed my life, literally, practically. When are we on? When are we off? When are we engaged? When are we disengaged? When are, you know what I mean? What does a rhythm of life look like where I can do what I do and not burn out? And, oh, yeah, that started a whole thing. I was in bad shape. Whew.
Yeah, absolutely. And, of course, nobody would have known that at the time because I was, you know, I was following your work at the time, and there's no way I would have known that, or I don't think anyone would have known that was going on.
Tricky thing. You've advocated for mental health. You can go pro at keeping going.
Yeah.
You can be Premier League level endurance. Like, okay, what time? Okay, great. Flip the on switch. Here we go. And yet you're also just scraping the bottom of the bucket of your energy.
Yeah.
Just so tired at some like existential cosmological level, like something within your universe is just oof.
So
thank God for crashes.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yes, I've had my own moments of that. I've talked about them on the show before, you know, suicidal ideation and almost losing it all, and that was an ending that was a beginning. That was,
yeah.
I had to get to that point to start growing again, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. And I love, I mean, you've talked about the Sabbath thing that you practice so many times, and I always love you talking about it on the Rubcast as well. And it kind of, I keep telling myself, I want to do that. I want to have a Sabbath where I don't switch anything on, where I don't work, where I don't, and it's so difficult. Especially when you have a 9-to-5 job, you know. And you want to do creative work, but you can't do it 9-to-5. So you have to make time for it somewhere. But but definitely that's, yeah, I love that. I love that so much. So I wanted to move on to this. There's this metaphor that you use in the book, which I love, and you use it throughout the book, of a butterfly. I just love this butterfly when you talk about how you can hold it down and you can look at it, but it doesn't, it can't do anything. It's kind of stuck. It's stuck where it is. It's not able to be who it is. And one of the things you talk about in relation to that is kind of fundamentalism and like holding our beliefs too tightly and staying where we are instead of choosing to grow. Like 20 years ago, when I lost my mother, I didn't realize it at the time, but I just exchanged one fundamentalism for another, it took another grief experience for me to push me out of that, like about five, six years ago, and actually get free of it all. And so it's a really easy trap to fall into because it looks like it's something different, but that's actually not. It's just different language for the same thing. How could people who might be going through, I mean, we're all going through a collective grief experience right now. So,
yeah.
And it might be easy when it's over to go to kind of fall back into the same old certainty. And it might be tempting. So how do you think people can avoid that and actually choose something which is truly liberating?
Yeah, that's a great question. At the heart of this book, Everything is Spiritual, is this understanding that lurking in all of the aches and pains and disruptions of life is spirit. And different traditions name it differently, but spirit is a word lots of traditions, the animating energy of the universe, is present and personal in all the stuff we're going through, individually or collectively. And out of it comes new creation. So I talk about the Genesis poem. There's a ancient creation poem in which spirit is hovering over these dark and formless waters, hovering over the abyss of creation, the abyss of our lives. And then spirit enters into waters, and out of it comes something new. And so the art of life is you have to give expression to whatever you're in the midst of. So anger, loss, rage, doubt, despair, you have to give it expression. That's step one. You always have, if you hold it down, then it just haunts you in some other way. But then you give it expression, and then you keep your eyes open. But what's the new thing that wants to be birthed in this? So even right now, everything that we're collectively going through, what new creation can come out of this? And it's the question that changes everything. It doesn't mean you're not grieving. Doesn't mean you're not sad. Doesn't mean you're not angry, anxious, whatever the word. But you also have just learned over time. Because when you ask people about the most significant moments in their life, the moments that really shaped them and transformed them, generally, people talk about loss. You talk about a loss 5 or 6 years ago, then your mother 20 years ago, like defining moments that helped shape James Prescott into who James Prescott is.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like you're curious about, you're drawn to the depths of life, to the substance of life, to, you don't just want to have shallow, superficial conversations in which you slide over the surface of things and chat around about meaningless details. You want to like have an encounter with the depth of life. Yeah, that comes from your loss. So it shaped you and really beautiful. It opened you up, tuned you to a certain sound. So that's the invitation, is to be growing as a person in your understanding of how this works, so that you can spot it. Oh, there's the new. There's the invitation. There it is. Yeah. And then it truly changes everything. And that's not over the top or an exaggeration. That's what happens, is it changes you. And then that changes what happens around you.
It does, yeah. When you change how you see the world and how you believe, it changes how you see everything else.
Absolutely.
So, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, the other thing, I mean, this is a bit, one of the things I noticed about this book, it covers so many different topics, right? Okay. It talks about grief. It talks about birth. It talks about creativity. It talks about like mental health. It talks about like science. It talks about, and it's like, but yeah, it all feels like it's one.
Oh, good. That's what I wanted.
No, absolutely. It does.
You're a writer. You know that.
Yeah.
You're writing. It's almost like a constellation of images that something emerges in amongst the constellation that is the thing. But if you, yeah, good. A couple of interviewers have said, I cannot summarize this book. I can't.
I think everything is spiritual is a perfect summary for the book, really. Because it felt good. Like everything is connected, like all of that stuff is spiritual, you know.
And that's a feeling as much or more than a concept. Like, we can all assent to that and like agree to that cognitively, but when you feel it in all the bits and pieces. So what I wanted to do, in some ways the book is just a series of awkward and embarrassing stories from my life, and things not going well, but I wanted them all to be linked and unfold in such a way that as it grew, you kept finding yourself in it.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I know that. Oh, well, that's universe. Oh, I've been there. That at some point, my particulars were speaking to your particulars and the universe between them in such a way that people were having experience of like, oh, I think we're going to make it here. like I said, there's something else going on here.
Yeah. I definitely got that sense when I was reading it, that there was a, something shifted in me beyond my conscious self. It was, yeah, I was a different person when I finished the book than when I started the book. And I couldn't cognitively figure it out, but I just knew. So, yeah, I think that worked. When you talk about creativity, you tell this story of how you realized when you sat with a message longer and then the more of your heart was in a message, that the more it resonated with people at a deeper level that you couldn't even plan for. And that really, as someone who's like writes and does podcasts, loves creativity, loves talking about creativity, that was really powerful for me. Because I think, because I feel like it was so true that, because I went, when I write something with my head, it's not that good, right? But when I write something with my heart and I sit with it for a while and I reflect on it and allow it to move me, then that's when I write my best work.
Absolutely. Yeah. Because sometimes there is just the transmission of information, somebody telling somebody else bits and pieces, which is fine if you need to know what time the subway's leaving. Like, it's very helpful. So we're not against information, but there is something that happens when you have you've had a lived experience and you are now witnessing to what you experienced in such a way that somebody else either sees what you saw and experiences what you saw, or brings their own experience into it and it goes in some other direction you never would have expected. That is just it's a fundamentally different energetic interaction than simply the transmission of information.
Yeah,
and I often think about it, it is when you sink down from head into heart.
Yeah.
Because the heart knows, soul knows, mind thinks, but soul knows, and it's a deeper knowing.
Yeah, that's right. It really is. It really is. And yeah, it's difficult to explain to somebody who's not experienced it, but I definitely feel that so much.
I've often noticed with somebody like...
Yeah.
That you can ask somebody to try to invite people to take a deep breath, and literally just a breath can often slow down the chatter. A couple breaths can slow down the chatter. When somebody can't figure out what the next step is, or they're overwhelmed with the data or the moment, just a couple of breaths. And sometimes you ask people, if you sink down into your heart, is there clear? What does it say? How often, just that image, people instantly, they don't know whether to do this or that or this person or that, and then you create space where they can sink down from head, and instantly people go, oh, yeah, of course.
Yeah.
It's amazing to me how often there's clarity, like, two breaths away.
Yeah, absolutely. I've done that myself. Definitely works. Definitely does work. I mean, one of the challenges I always have is when I'm writing is, especially if I'm writing a book or something that's going to be public, you know, that people are going to be able to see, is just that little voice sometimes that comes in just telling you that, oh, people are going to see this, and, you know, gets kind of worried about, you know, has all those anxieties about what will people think and how many people will read it, and one of those things which I know don't matter, and they don't matter to me, and then that's not why I create things at all. But that can still get into your head if you let it. I think when you go to the head, that can easily happen.
Right. Even your faith. That can go to your, it gets into your head.
Yeah.
Where your heart is like, yeah, there's a thing we got to make. Keep typing. Follow it.
Let's
see where it goes.
Because I was going to ask how you avoid that, but it's quite clear how you avoid it. It's like, just go to the heart and just go to, like, the joy of creating something. You know, it's the joy of the work.
The mind is a wonderful servant to the heart.
Yes.
Not like you sink into your heart and somehow you're dumber. No. The intellect is there. It's just serving whatever it is that is the real thing you're trying to articulate and communicate.
So let the heart be the master of your creativity. And yeah. the head serves the heart, not the other way around.
Yeah, right. Which is, you're a writer, how many people have turned in a manuscript and they were like, there's no heart in it? Like, that was the feedback they got. It doesn't feel like it's you, or it feels like it's too cold or sterile, or, this wonderful mind that built this modern world, we have so much to think of, hospitals and airports, perhaps a vaccine in the near future. Like, there's wonderful mind built a fairly extraordinary modern world, so we have much to be grateful for. It's just that it sometimes runs ahead in other areas of life.
That's right. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's definitely my experience, for sure. I love to communicate through story. That's kind of how I communicate generally, and that's how you communicate in the book. It feels like it's the whole book feels like it's one long stream of consciousness. You know, like it's just because there's no chapter numbers, there's no chapter titles. It's not even broken up in terms of pages. It just kind of flows, and it has breaks, obviously, but it just feels like it was just it feels really organic.
Good.
Yeah, and what did that process? As a writer, I know, like, when you write something, especially when it's something personal, it changes you. It does something to you. So, what did the process of writing this book kind of do to you?
Yeah, very perceptive question, because it owes me nothing. It, from the beginning of writing it, was like, oh, this is something about owning every square inch of my story. This is something about looking back on all of it and making peace with all of it and celebrating all of it, even it's all good, even when it wasn't.
Mm.
So it was very, very, very personal. It was and there were a number of places where I was, well, what happened next? And what did I learn? And then what happened next? There's these two questions. Okay, well, what happened next? Okay, then what did I learn? So when in doubt, just one of those two questions. Well, where do I go next? What happened next? And it was like some sort of gathering up all the little bits and pieces and aches and pains, and just embracing them. This is how it went so far. What a wondrous thing it is to be here. And I distinctly had the feeling like this book owes me nothing. It's already given me more gifts than I could ever imagine. If no one ever read it, it would still have been an incredible experience. So the fact that it out in the world, actually today is the release date in America, it's sort of hard to put into words, but yes, it had a spell about it. Like, it had my editor even used this phrase, just don't break the spell. And so that's why, like, there were no chapters. Is right away I was like, oh, this just starts in and goes. And it doesn't, there's no table of contents, there's no, even those literary choices were very clear right away.
And I love that,
because
I'm always interested in creative innovation and fresh takes on things. That's why I love reading your novel, because it was unlike any other novel I'd ever read. It was just like, no chapter titles, no chapters, it just starts and goes,
And I asked my editor, I have a wonderful editor, and I asked her towards the end, like, we had done the final rounds of editing, I said, you never said anything about chapters or table of contents. And I said, I wondered if at some point you'd say, okay, now, like, actually, what are those? And I said, how did you instinctively know that? And so we had this great talk about it. So I was like, that was really interesting to know this book doesn't feel or look like books are normally structured. And then he had the same thing. That's really interesting.
Yeah. It's, yeah, and it's intuitively kind of felt right.
Things have a certain identity to them, and part of the process is it's almost like you're interviewing the thing you're trying to make. What are you? Who are you? How tall are you? What shape are you? What color are you? This had some sort of identity, and I was like learning its identity. What a incredibly beguiling, serious process.
Yeah, it is. I love the creative process. Yeah, I love the process more than the kind of the hustle and the result and everything else at the end. It's much more fun when you're kind of dreaming up ideas. Mm-hmm. Yeah, always. I have so many ideas. And actually, I love that it ends. The story at the end is like about the process of conception. Like, I was completely.
You didn't see that coming.
I didn't, and I loved it. I was completely sucked into it. I was just like completely kind of everything else disappeared. I was just in the story, and it was brilliant. And I just loved that you ended with a beginning. It was,
yeah,
and also that you, in that beginning, actually, you acknowledged that, and I didn't actually know this before the story, that there's, well, maybe I did know it, but I hadn't read it anywhere before, but that all these other sperm die, like, before they even get anywhere. The chances of a sperm getting to be fertilized is so minuscule that you're...
Right.
Everyone is a survivor. Everyone who's ever born is a survivor, because you've had to survive all of that before you were even conceived. You know, and the death is still, like, an engine room of life and new beginnings, you know.
Like, no wonder we're moved by stories of survivors.
Yeah.
This is funny how we are moved by overcoming obstacles and against all the odds prevailing, when this is all how we came to be.
Yeah. It's wonderful. It was just so uplifting. And it always felt like, for me, it was like, we're moving into, like, this is the end of, for Rob, this is the end of this book, but it's the beginning of something. Something else is beginning already.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
whatever it is, you know, some new creative project, some new new thing is already beginning.
That's correct.
Yeah, and it also brings me back to something that somebody very wise said to me about the womb being dark, but also being a place where life begins, and change our perception of darkness. And that it's actually the beginning of something new, which takes us kind of back to the beginning, you know, about grief and things ending and things beginning. But I ended the book feeling very hopeful.
I love it. That's very meaningful to me.
So thank you. Yeah. So just one more thing. This has been really great, by the way. I really enjoyed this. If there's like one lesson that you've learned through your story that you'd want to pass on, if you can only pass on one thing to people, like one lesson, one bit of wisdom, what would you pass on?
If there's always more going on.
Always more.
It's not a static, fixed universe. But every conversation, every conflict, every worry, every event, every moment, that now is eternal and endless. now is the only thing that lasts forever. We'll only ever have now, and it's bottomless.
Yeah.
So the race to get to the next moment, or the compulsion to try to recreate a previous moment, nostalgia, fear, worry, anxiety, regret, are all rooted in a lack of presence. But when we're here, and you and I are talking, and that's all that's happening, you enter into a different mode of being. And it's actually infinite and indestructible and bottomless in its possibilities. And when you begin to live like this, you're never bored. Atoms materialize. They come as particles, subatomic particles, come into being and then disappear, and they don't know where they come from, and they don't know where they go. Empty space itself is filled with creation and activity. So you're never bored. You're having an interaction, but you ask one more question, and suddenly you're into a whole new space with the person. There's another way to live.
Yeah.
It's slower and fuller. And it's got more color and more texture and more taste. So, yeah, there's more going on here.
Fantastic. Thank you, Europe. Thank you for this book. And I recommend everyone go and get it. You can go get it wherever you buy books. It's available now. It's called Everything is Spiritual. And check it out. So thank you, Rob, for coming back on the show.
It was wonderful talking to you, James.
And thanks, everyone, for listening.